Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
PJ Morton is an American singer, songwriter, performer, and producer. He is a 5-time Grammy Award winner and 20-time Grammy Award nominee, who has earned numerous nominations for BET, Soul Train, and NAACP Image Awards. He has also sold out countless shows at historic venues like the Apollo Theatre, Kennedy Center, and others around the world. On top of running his own record label, Morton Records, and serving as Maroon 5's full-time keyboardist for the past 14 years, he has collaborated with Stevie Wonder, Erykah Badu, John Batiste, Nas, Lil Wayne, JoJo, Yeba, Jill Scott, and many others. In 2024, PJ will become the first black composer to ever write an original song for a Disney attraction, Tiana's Bayou Adventure, coming soon to Disneyland and Disney World. He also released an album from Cape Town to Cairo, which was entirely written, recorded, and produced during a 30-day trip across Africa. In November of 2024, he will release his book, Saturday Night, Sunday Morning. The memoir sees him recounting and reflecting upon a trailblazing path that continues to defy expectations and straddle the tensions of music and faith, race and culture, expression and identity. Furthermore, he recently wrote the closing song for Regina King's Netflix film, Shirley. He is working on music for an unannounced Lee Daniels film and an unannounced Dr. Zia's series, and is featured in Apple's new iPhone 15 commercial. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got PJ Morton.
Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
I'm actually in Las Vegas, starting this residency with Maroon 5. But yeah, no, I'm doing great.
Okay, so you've got a fascinating journey in the entertainment space. So at what age did you think, cool, whether it was a child or teenager, did you feel cool? I want to be in this creative world. And how did that journey progress?
Yeah, you know, I think 8 years old is when I started to like play music and knew that I loved it. But I think at 14 years old is when I really was like, okay, I want to do this as an actual profession. Like I want to write songs, I want to make music. So 14, I'd say, was that age.
And then what were the next steps? So you had that realization, and how did that journey progress?
Well, I was lucky because I could kind of express myself. My dad was a pastor, and in church, we had really good music, really good musicians. So it was kind of a safe place for me to see music, learn music, watch it being played, watch it being recorded. So I was around it, and I started to write myself. About 14 years old, we had a little group, and I wrote a song for that group. God's Property was a choir. And so I just started to write songs. And then when I was 15 years old, I got my driver's license, and I was able to go to a studio, a real studio. And I wanted to hear what my song sounded like what I heard in my head, the harmonies, and really I wanted to hear it probably recorded. And I recorded that a song there when I was 15. And at 16, I placed my first song with a gospel group called Men of Standard when I was about 16 years old. And that really started my path in music. I mean, I got a real check for that, you know, like I was really in it as a songwriter. I was already a musician getting paid as a musician, but that was my first as like in the music business.
Okay. So you've got a number of different avenues in the entertainment space. So as a first point of call, your solo career. So when you're creating music for yourself, your creative process, what invigorates music? What motivates it? Is it easy every time? Do you collaborate with others? Let's unpack your creative brain when creating solo.
Yeah, when I'm creating solo, I mean, it's not one way every time. I'll say that. Sometimes it's difficult. Usually when it's difficult and I don't have to put something out, I just walk away from it. You know, I don't think it should be difficult.
Okay.
I think creating should be something that feels easy and it feels like necessary. You know, that's how it's always been for me. It's like I just need to express myself, you know, and music is the best way for me to do that. But usually it starts with me at a piano or something like that, drum machine, and I go melody first. But even before I try to say any lyrics, any words, I'm just, you know, I want the melody to move me. And so I usually start there and then eventually put lyrics to things. Collaboration for me comes much later, usually after I know what it is already. I've tried to collaborate earlier in the process, and for me, it usually like clouds my process. I'm not really good at with a bunch of people around. I need to just get my thoughts out, then I can have opinions and everything, you know. So usually, even if I'm thinking of like a feature, I've been blessed to work with so many people, you know, who featured on my music, but I'm not even thinking of them when I'm writing my music solo. I'm just thinking of trying to get the best song, the best creation I'm trying to do on my own. And then I say, oh, you know who would be great on this? You know, Stevie Wonder would be great on this.
Yes.
You know? Then send it on and see it. But I kind of got to see the idea through first before I get into that, a bunch of collaboration.
Okay, so you mentioned thinking of the person that would be great on the song. Obviously, you put it out there, you send it to whom, Stevie Wonder or the various other artists. Are you sometimes surprised, like, oh, they said yes, because you're just hoping that they'll join? Or is it just like, oh, this is a great song, I know they're going to come through with me?
No, I never, I never assume that is going to happen. No, I'm always surprised. I mean,
okay.
I want to stay that way, you know, because we're blessed. This is a gift to be able to do this. And people, I know how busy I am. You know, sometimes I want to do things and I can't do them. So I'm really empathetic and really understand, you know, that sometimes it may just not work out. Mm. And it's not worked out plenty times, you know. So I've gone through that enough to not ever expect, you know, people to just say, oh, this is a great song, I'm doing it. But for me, and a lot of times it has worked out. And I mean, I remember I didn't know El DeBarge, you know, before I got him on that song. So I'd never met him. There was no relationship. So I really didn't know what was going to happen with that. And as soon as we got on the phone together, he was like, you know, I love your music. I'm a fan of your music. I was totally shocked and didn't know what to expect. But that was one of those times where it was like a pleasant surprise, you know, where it's like, wait, you know who I am? You know, I didn't even know you knew who I was. And yeah, so no, I'm always like a kid and don't ever expect anything.
So El DeBarge from DeBarge, Rhythm of the Night from the 80s, that's that crew. Yes,
right.
Absolutely.
So yeah,
in this moment right now, obviously it'll change every time I ask you this or every thought process.
Yeah.
Three people or bands or artists or people that you have yet to collaborate with that are top of mind, you think, I want to collaborate with this one, this one, and this one?
Great question. I would say Kendrick Lamar, D'Angelo,
mm-hmm.
and who else? I mean, I'd always say Stevie, you know. Man, if I could get to Paul McCartney, I would. James Taylor. Let's say James Taylor.
Okay.
James Taylor. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
there's five there. So let's five. Let's put it out there. Let's step into it. Let's step into the surprises. I like that. You've got a lot of sort of sync stuff happening, like music for Disney, music for different programs and stuff like that. Is that a newer form of stream or creation in your world? Or have you always been doing that type of creation?
I've always done it to some degree. Mm-hmm. I remember years ago, my first thing was like I did a couple of Walmart commercials, you
yes.
know, music for, I remember like Black History Month. I did a couple of Walmart commercials. So I've dipped my toe in it. It's just been some projects more recently that are more visible, you know, and bigger. I've never done anything on this scale, of course, of the scale of Disney. Mm. I've never done anything like this. And what's different about that is it's an actual physical attraction. You know, it's a physical ride that lives on for a very long time. Mm. I can't even compare that to Sinks. But we got this, the movie this year, Shirley, song I did with Samara Joy, working on a animated Netflix series that's coming out pretty soon. So yeah, I guess I'd say there has been more of it more recently, but I've always kind of dipped my toe in it a little bit.
So when you're creating for something like that, what is the difference compared to when you're creating for yourself? Is it that you get a brief, or how does it work?
Yeah, well, I mean, I could talk to the Disney thing. It was like they gave me the scenario.
Okay.
This is Princess Tiana. You know, she's married now. This is a continuation from the movie. What is she now? She owns this restaurant now. She's having this big party, and we have to find these musicians from the bayou. That's what I got. I got to use my imagination and just really like go, you know, anywhere I wanted to go. They didn't tell me tempo. They didn't tell me what it should sound like. They gave me that freedom. I mean, they told me it was the bayou, you know, it was based in New Orleans. So I had that. But I submitted three different ideas initially, you know, three different songs, and we eventually narrowed it down. So that in that type of thing, that's that direction. And the Netflix thing is more like more, even more specific. I'm, you know, they're giving me the story.
Yeah.
And I receive the song, and I have to produce it and make it sound the way it's supposed to sound. It's very similar to me, though, when I'm writing for another artist. I get to be outside of myself and kind of become whatever the thing is, whatever the artist is. I get to become them, you know. And for me, that is a relief a lot of times. It's like acting. I don't have to be PJ today, you know. I can be somebody else. So that's exciting, and allows me to use my creativity in a different way.
I love the segue, because that was the next question. So when you are writing for other artists, do you know going into the studio, okay, this is going to be a song for another artist, or is it a situation of, okay, I'm creating and this may be for me or may be for someone else?
Yeah, I've done both, actually.
Okay.
I've done both where, you know, if an artist asks me for a song, then it's like, okay, I'm going in, I'm going to work on a song for this artist. But sometimes I just go in and I'm like, you know, I don't know if I want to write something for myself today, or, you know, I'm just going to create, and I don't know who this is going to be for. It may end up being mine. It may end up being for someone else. So I've had both scenarios.
And then when you're writing for other artists, do they come in and collaborate in that writing process, or you just write it, as you said, and get the thoughts out, and then they collaborate at a later stage?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if they demand it. But usually now, you know, after being in it for a while, people know, you know, they're asking for a PJ song. So they wanted the process that I do it usually, which is on my own initially. And then I'm open to any feedback or, you know, like changes or something that they think doesn't fit them or anything. But more times than not, I'm usually a fan of the artist, you know, and I'm working with someone I want to work with. So I usually kind of understand who they are, you know, and make sure I know that when I'm creating. So more often than not, they like it as is. But I'm always open to changes and, you know, whatever makes them feel the most comfortable.
Yeah.
It's very selfless. Yeah.
Okay. So now the next part of your creation or activation in the world of music. How did the collaboration with Maroon 5 come to be?
Maroon came through a friend of mine. Actually, Maroon 5 was, they were searching for a music director for a tour they were going on. It was a new album that they just had finished called Hands All Over. And so they wanted Questlove, actually. He had just gotten Jimmy Fallon. This is 14 years ago now. And so he wasn't available. He recommended someone who happened to be a friend of mine, Adam Blackstone, who's now a music director to the stars, to everyone. He's done multiple Super Bowls and Grammy Awards and everything. He's a star in his own right. And but they asked him when he came in if they knew any guys who play keyboards and sang. And he was like, oh, I got the guy that plays keyboards and sings. That's how it came to me initially. He was like, do you want to do this thing with Maroon 5? And I was like, yeah, sure. I was on a tour, but I'm like, I wanted to change myself. So, and then he called me right back and he was like, well, they don't really know you, so they want you to audition. And I was like, audition? I've never auditioned in my life, you know? And they had been a band since eighth grade, since like 13 years old. So they hadn't had an audition either. So for both of us, I imagine it was a little awkward. I postponed the last 3 days of my tour and went to L.A. and auditioned on Sunday morning. They wanted me to learn Sunday morning. And after we played that, I kind of felt comfortable as I got in the room. It felt like I knew them for years already. They were like, "Well, what else do you know?" After we played Sunday morning, we'd start jamming on a bunch of songs, and I left, and because they had more people auditioning that day, so they saw those guys. But they told me later on that they knew after me that that was it. And so it was the second day of auditions that they just canceled altogether and gave me a call later on that day and say, you know, you're in. And those first 2 years, 2010 to 2012, I wasn't really visible in any promo or anything. I was just in the band, the touring band. And 2012, overexposed. And then that's when you started to see me. You know, a black guy just popped up in the Maroon 5 pictures, you know, all of a sudden. Yeah, it's been a ride, man. 14 years now. Like I said, I'm here in Vegas right now. We're doing our residency here at Park MGM. So it's been a beautiful run.
And when they create music, new music for albums, are you participating in that as well?
Not really,
Okay.
not in a major way. I'm playing all the keyboard stuff usually. But you know, not heavily in the writing and production. It's just the way I came in. I kind of appreciated it, because it allowed me to focus on my solo stuff. And I got to just be the keyboard player in Maroon 5. It was kind of like refreshing, you know. I will say this new album that we're working on is going back to more of the traditional way the band worked on music, which is, you know, us vibing together, jamming together. So there may be more of that on this new record, but up to this point, I've mostly played my part as a keyboard player.
Okay, so I find this quite interesting. So you perform your own headline solo shows and then you perform as a keyboarder for Maroon 5. What is the difference for you personally between those two different scenarios?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's obviously amazing to play to screaming fans regardless, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Usually there's a lot more with Maroon 5, you know, a lot bigger places, but I'm in a different role, you know, and it feels like it's a team and we're carrying this, and Adam is really carrying the load of the show, and I'm playing an accompanying part. And so it just is a different feel that I get from that. When I'm playing solo, regardless of the size of place, people are there for me, for my songs, for my voice. If I'm not there, the show doesn't go on. You know what I mean? It doesn't, it's like it moves because of me. And that is both rewarding, but it's also a lot of responsibility. I'm not able to just chill. You know, I don't have to do every interview when I'm with Maroon 5. I'm in the room while Adam is doing them all. And but when I'm my band is chilling, and you know, when I'm doing all these interviews and doing all the things I have to do, but it's also so rewarding to know that the songs that you sat right here to write and came from your brain, people are singing, you know, all together in front of you. And so that is a different feeling altogether. So both amazing, you know, feelings, but quite different.
I'm that dude that's right up in front. I'm dancing, I'm jamming. I'll take my cell phone out for maybe one or two videos, one or two photos, and I put it away. I notice a lot of people around me oftentimes are videoing, posting, tweeting, WhatsApping, whatever they're doing for a longer period of time. And from the person on the stage, which obviously more from the solo scenario, from observing a bunch of phones, do you feel that takes away from the energy and that connection, or it's just where society is at the moment?
I mean, I think it's a combination of both. I don't like the really long recording, you know. I don't like it when it's extensive, like a full song or more. I've seen people leave it out, you know, for like multiple songs, you know. And that maybe is a little distracting. You know, I don't fight what is natural, though. I think people, when you fight against evolution and when you fight against technology, you tend to lose that fight every time. It's like the people who still run typewriters, you know. It's like, man, sorry. I mean, it's moving, man, whether you want it to or not, you know.
That went
I'm
long ago.
sorry. Yeah, I do understand the benefit of people being able to share. This is something that's important. So I don't mind you catching a clip and catching a moment and showing you in the moment, you know, because you get to share that memory and capture that memory. And that brings new fans. I'm not the person who's upset when phones are out, but when somebody's just leaving it up there the whole time, that is a bit distracting. But I welcome it because I want you to share this. You know, I think of the bands that were you know, people were really diehard fans when you think of the Grateful Dead and when you think of Prince and how people would have these cassettes, man, that they would share with people. You know, they would record these shows and that's how the word got out. So that's not lost on me. I think it's the newer version of that. But I think there, you know, there's some balance with it. Because I want you to be in the moment too and just feel what's going on as well.
I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs. For me, it's an energy exchange to you guys to say thank you for all the hard work that you do. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, the booklet, the listening from song one to whatever number. I'm sure you are aware because you've got your own record label, but vinyl's a massive comeback all over. In cassettes as well, which is a bit weird because I hated when they unraveled, but CDs as well. I mean, the UK, for example, they've got a basket of goods where they gauge prices for exchanges for tax purposes. And vinyls has been in that basket for the longest time. And because of the upsurge of CD sales, again, that's now back in the basket as well. But then we've got these streaming platforms that people consume music on. What are your observations and perceptions of the landscape at the moment?
I mean, we were really early on vinyl. You know, we do bundles, you know, six different albums I think we have on vinyl, six or seven. So I'm a big believer in that. And I think for me, the nostalgia loves having the physical product and being it, and the art that, you know, it's art as well. It's just, its own thing is art, you know. So I enjoy, you know, time goes into what the cover's gonna look like and what the artwork's gonna look like. And for me, lyrics are so important. So we put lyrics in there for you to be able to read along and really understand. Again, I also don't fight technology, right?
Yes,
And
like you said.
I was just on you know, Apple Music the other day and learning a song and the lyrics, you know, were going up the screen and I'm like, man, this is amazing. I get to read the lyrics in real time. I love that just as much. So I really think it becomes about the individual. It becomes about the motivation. For me, I'll buy something at a show, a vinyl or something, and not necessarily play it because of the art, just looking at it and seeing it. So I think all of these things are necessary. You know, my crew is one of the ones who just n never stopped. You know, people stopped printing CDs. We kept printing CDs. And like I said, we're very early on vinyl. Just merchandise in general, I just always thought was important. You know, when you're a fan, man, you want to support and you want cool things you can get, you know, and I love those things. So I just treat it as if I was a fan, you know, and what I would want.
A whole bunch of things, the book, the new album, the tours, the Maroon 5. You're busy, as we know. What can you tell us? So you've got the residency with Maroon 5. What's happening the rest of the year? Is that going to be the rest of the year? What's happening early next year? Are you allowed to tell us? I know lots of things are secretive.
Yes, some things are. Well, I go back to the West Coast leg of my tour, Cape Town to Cairo tour, which has been amazing so far. We've done Europe, we've done Africa, we did the US, East Coast and the South, and now we're going to the West Coast. Let's see, my Black Friday show in New Orleans. But right now I'm focusing on this documentary that we created while I made this album in Africa over 30 days. It's a really fascinating story. Just creating this album from scratch and seeing me discover Africa as well as discovering these new songs and discovering myself. It's just really beautiful what happened. I didn't know what was going to happen, but now on the other side of it, it's like, man, that was really special what we just did. And so that's a big focus right now, is to get that done, to have it out next year. And Disneyland is opening this fall. I'm excited about that. Tiana's Bayou Adventure Pictures opening up in California. It's already open in Orlando. So we're going to be moving. The book is November 12th. Yeah. You mentioned it all. I think that's all I can say. That's all I can say so far. Like I said, I mean, it's known now, but Maroon 5, we're working on a new record that is hopefully out sometime soon. I don't have any dates for that. I can't say that. I don't want to get in trouble.
Perfect.
But we're working on it. We're working
Okay.
on it. So it's exciting. Yeah.
So what was the inspiration for the journey from Cape to Cairo? What was it your thought, okay, I'm going to do this? How did it all come to be?
Yeah, it was a combination of things. So initially it was just a small idea of my partners in Africa, Empire, have a bunch of amazing artists over in Africa. Empire Africa has Burna Boy, has Fireboy, T.Y. Savage, so many artists, right? And so they were like, "Do you want to collaborate with any of these artists that we have?" And I was like, "Okay." I was pretty burnt out, actually. I just had finished my last album, Watch the Sun, where I kind of put everything into it. It was right after the pandemic. But then my manager and I started to talk more about it as a bigger idea of, man, Africa and like discovering it. Like, what about, and remember what Paul Simon did with Graceland? And I remembered, I was young when that came out. So I had to refresh. And so I started to watch things, documentaries on Graceland and everything. And of course it did so well, album of the year at the Grammys, all of these things. But I also saw some of the negative comments about it. You came to Africa, but then you just went and left and, created something totally separate from, and so I saw all of that and I was like, okay, well, let's do it. This seems amazing. Now I want to go to Africa, but let's not just go for a little bit. Let's not just go do a show and leave. Let's stay for 30 days and let's go across Africa. Let's do four countries. So it just started to become bigger and bigger of an idea. Until we got to 30 days, I won't write anything before I get there. Won't write anything after I leave. So it is purely created in Africa. These thoughts are purely created while I was on the continent. And it was scary initially, but it became really freeing. Just trusting my instinct and trusting my gut. I'm just very proud of what happened. What we got.
Amazing. It is a beautiful project and beautiful work. Why was it scary initially?
It usually takes me 6 months to a year to make an album,
Oh,
so
I
I'm saying,
understand. Understand. Okay.
yeah. So I put this pressure on myself and promised everybody and spent money and took four, I forget how 10 people to Africa. It's like I had to deliver at this
Yes.
point. And
Okay.
it's like, so I put a year process down to 30 days. So, because it
Okay.
wasn't only just about writing songs and then I'll figure out how they fit later. No, this was writing completely there. So I got to know whether they fit now before I leave, so it was a matter of sequencing before I left, all of these things. So it was a little nerve-wracking initially. Yeah.
Okay, makes
Yeah.
sense.
Yeah.
Okay, I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 10 years, 50 hours, I know your answer will be different every time simply because there are millions of them. I'm not saying
Yes.
favorite, I'm saying top of
Okay.
mind. If you had to
Okay.
push play to five songs by other artists, once you finish this conversation, what would those songs be and by whom?
Five songs.
Yes.
Okay. Whew. All right. Beach Boys, God Only Knows. Let's see. I was just thinking of D'Angelo. How does it feel? I mean, it just always brings me somewhere. Man, I probably, oh, let's say I talked about DeBarge earlier. All This Love by DeBarge. Was that three?
Yes.
Man, this is so random, but I'm just gonna do this to
That's
me.
fine.
This is the game.
This is a game, yeah.
Vibrant Thing, Vibrant Thing by Q-Tip. I don't
Okay.
know how to where I don't know where that came from. And the last one I'll say, man, that moves me every single time. Let's just say Summer Soft. Yeah, it's from Songs in the Key of Life, Stevie Wonder.
Okay, lovely. Some of them on my list. I need to add some of them. So thank you for the reminders. The podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say to the audience?
Oh man, as a final message, I would like to say that, on the heels of what I've just done in Africa and creating this album, as creatives, I think creativity in this age of where the music industry is going through so many changes. We're seeing so many people get let go. We're seeing these labels go through big changes. All we have as creatives is what we always have, you know, always have, which is creativity. Like, really dial into that. Don't think about sales. Don't think about marketing. Don't think about radio. Think about things that move you. Do they actually move you? Not analytics. Think about the things that move you, and let's just make beautiful art, and we'll find our way to sell it and how we're to survive and all of that. But the initial thing and where we should start is the things that move us, the beautiful things that move us. So
thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.